KPCW News Time now, 8:06. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Currently, we've got 55 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 56 degrees. And on the phone with us now from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Park City and Heber. Hey, we're looking at another gorgeous day. Temperatures are climbing. High pressure is building in from the west across the Beehive State. So that's going to just continue to generate lots of blue sky out there. Temperatures to the mid to upper 70s for Park City today. Heber, 84. Sunshine continues Thursday. We should start to see a little bit of cloud cover increase, though, into Friday. So temperatures even warmer tomorrow. The ridge starts to slide southeast over the Four Corner region. That just pumps in some hot and dry air from the south. So 84 for the high in Park City on Thursday. And then we're going to hang out in those mid-80s even into Friday and Saturday. Mentioned some of the cover starting to increase. We'll have a small chance of a stray shower or storm Friday afternoon into the evening. I think a slightly better chance on Saturday, but really not going to be a washout, I think, of either of those days. While temperatures are in the 80s for highs, we'll be in the 50s for overnight lows. Plan on partly cloudy conditions. We have a better chance of monsoonal moisture moving in Sunday into Monday. It's about a 20 to 30% chance, though, of seeing a shower or storm. So nothing too significant. Just need to keep your eyes to the sky if you're going to be out and about recreating Sunday and Monday. Temperatures do dip a little bit with some of the cloud cover moving in as well. So we'll go from 82 on Sunday to about 77 on Monday into next week. Tuesday, similar temperatures, but more sunshine taking over. In Heber, temperatures peak in the low 90s, should be about 92 by the time we get to Friday. Over the weekend, about 90 on Saturday with partly cloudy skies. And then into early next week, we'll drop back down to the mid-80s. We also have that threat, about a 20% chance of seeing an isolated shower or storm in the Heber area into early next week.
Okay, Nate, thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
And stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. He'll have an update on development projects throughout the county, including the latest on Dakota Pacific. Park City Manager Matt Dias will preview this week's two city council meetings today and tomorrow. And later on, the Executive Director of Summit Community Gardens, Helen Nadel, in with details on some of the upcoming events happening in the garden. Then stay tuned for the Mountain Life right after the Local News Hour. Today's guests include biochemist turned family physician and best-selling author Dr. Kate Shanahan. She'll discuss her book, Dark Calories, How Vegetable Oils Destroy Our Health and How We Can Get It Back. Then Bill Eddy is the Chief Innovation Officer of the High Conflict Institute based in San Diego. He discusses our new world of adult bullies, how to spot them, how to stop them. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, and of course you can hear The Mountain Life every Wednesday morning from 9 to 10. Taking a look at some local news now, Summit County Council members are poised to move forward with $30 million in sales tax bonds to purchase the Skullcandy building at Kimball Junction. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that building could house county offices.
The county council meets Wednesday to vote whether to issue the bonds needed to buy Skullcandy's headquarters building and land in Kimball Junction. Council members unanimously decided to purchase the building and land for $17.5 million in May. County staff estimates renovations could cost $12.5 million, so they've recommended $30 million in bonds. The council's vote Wednesday sets certain limits on those bonds. A county staff report shows they must be paid back after 21 years and the interest rate could not exceed 6%. The county says it plans to pay back the $30 million with existing sales tax revenue. By taking over Skullcandy's lease, it will also earn more than $1 million per year from the audio equipment company, which will be renting its office space from the county. By law, the county can't bond until it holds a public hearing, which is currently scheduled for June 26th at 6 p.m. There won't be another vote at that hearing, says County Manager Shane Scott, so the bonds are issued 30 days after Wednesday's vote, if it's a yes. Staff could decide not to bond before the 30 days are up. Council members have said the Skullcandy building could play a part in a public-private partnership on the surrounding land in Western Kimball Junction. Developer Dakota Pacific Real Estate has been negotiating for the right to build housing on its roughly 50 empty acres there. The county has proposed Dakota add community needs like expanded transit facilities to its plan. That could mean knocking down the existing Sheldon Richens building, which houses the library, DMV, and other offices, expanding the adjacent transit center, then moving county services to the Skullcandy building. In that scenario, the county and company would share the building. Council members say repurposing the existing Skullcandy headquarters saves money compared to new construction. The council meets in its chambers at the Summit County Courthouse on Colville's Main Street Wednesday at 4 in the afternoon. The bonding discussion is scheduled shortly after 5. Visit kpcw.org for a link to attend online. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
On the phone with me now with an update from the Summit County Planning Office, I have Community Development Director Pat Puck. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this is your second to last monthly update with KPCW. When's your official retirement date?
Ooh, you're counting. My official retirement date will be the 1st of August. So I think if all plays out, we have one more of these beyond today's discussion.
Yeah, yeah. You're not counting?
You know, one would think I'd have it down to at least the days, but there's just so much going on right now. I actually couldn't give you an exact number. Not that I don't know that's on the horizon, but I guess my mind has been directed to some other things as of late. I think as we probably move into July or, you know, the fourth holiday, I'll be thinking more of it, but not a whole lot of time right now.
Okay. Well, let's start with the latest with Dakota Pacific Real Estates Project. Anything new there?
Yeah, I was just, when I was in the green room here, I was listening to Connor's report. I think I'm going to subcontract with him my remaining interviews. I think he really hit it. My understanding of where we are is council, a small group of council, and some staff folks have been in direct conversations with the folks at Dakota Pacific, and the discussions have really centered primarily on whether or not there is a interest or a possibility of exploring a public-private partnership, specifically in the area around the existing Richens building and the transit center. I think they've had talks about what transit improvements would look like there. You know, we obviously have a transit facility. Is that expanded, modified? Is that part of a redevelopment area there? You know, on the near horizon is the bus rapid transit system and the planning being done along that whole 224 corridor. There's been, a discussion related to, is that neighborhood, you know, appropriate to consider some additional capture parking? And then, you know, you throw on that whole pile, the whole work that's being done for the Interstate 80 State Route 224 interchange improvements. And I think that's where most of the discussions have been focusing on. I do not believe any of the discussions have gotten down to the level of detail to talk about things like density or residential, you know, numbers on the project. I think it's just really focusing on that transit area. I would anticipate probably some council discussion about this in the near future, but I'm unaware of any public hearings, public input sessions, you know, direct work in front of the council and the public on the project here in the month of June.
Yeah. Well, based on those submitted plans from Dakota Pacific, I mean, is that the plan to demolish the Sheldon Richens building and then just swap the property with the Dakota Pacific, or does the county keep that? I mean, it seems like the county always needs more space.
Yeah, too early to give an answer to that. Is that a possibility? Could there be, I mean, it runs the whole spectrum. You know, could it be, you know, an ultimate decision to add on to the existing transit building that we have now? Sure, they could do that. Could it go to the other end of the spectrum where they consider a complete redevelopment of that corner that would end up having the Richens building come down and replaced with some other structure serving some other function, transit included? You know, absolutely. You know, just recently touched on, you know, the possible acquisition of the Skull Candy building. You know, no mystery that the county is growing, the need for services is growing, services trigger more staff. More staff in approximate location to provide those services for those people are really important. And, you know, when they've been crunching the numbers, they've realized it's probably more cost efficient to move into an existing building and remodel it than jump into the game of outright whole, brand new, out of the ground construction. And so I would have to believe that the Dakota Pacific project area, being incredibly strategic in how the Kimball Junction neighborhood operates and functions, having skin in the game as a property owner in that area for Summit County would potentially be a very good thing. But it's really too early to say what direction and what decisions are going to come out of some of these discussions. I think the first discussion is there a willingness on the two parties to actually agree to get into the planning process, describe what that planning process is going to be in a, you know, in a clear and open and transparent manner. And I think that is not going to happen overnight. I think that, you know, that's going to take a little bit of time to work through. And like I say, nothing scheduled in terms of a formal public hearing or a public discussion in June, but I'd anticipate probably some council discussion on what direction that they want to go to here in the very near future.
Okay. What's new with the outlets, Park City plan to demolish that upper circle and rebuild?
Well, you know, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission has had a number of looks at that property over the last couple of years. Remember that there was an idea of possibly a Harmon's grocery store coming into the center, you know, that for a number of reasons didn't move forward with the property owners and Harmon's. And now there is a proposal to come back and rezone the property to the neighborhood mixed use zone. The upper back portion would receive probably a fairly intensive redo. The project would be mostly residential on the back, and then some infill with some residential on the front lower portion. I think what they were talking about the last time they're in front of the Planning Commission was around 420 residential units, and about half of those meeting our standards for workforce housing. I think there's been some scrubs of the plan. I would anticipate that here in the really near future, within the next week or so, that we would see a resubmittal of some drawings and an actual formal application to move through. So I wouldn't say it's been on the back burner. I think it's been on the front burner for the property owner and their design team. I think it's moving to the front burner when it comes to the Planning Commission and, you know, opportunity for the public to weigh in on that. So when would that hit? I would probably guess later this summer, if not early this fall.
All right. What's the latest with Henry Singh's marketplace at Silver Summit proposal? I mean, has he decided that he wants to rezone that?
Yeah, so what the proposal is currently, it will be a partial rezone of the property. It's currently zoned all community commercial. What the new proposal is, same project concept, you know, a mix of commercial, a grocery store, some residential, but the most current idea would be to rezone a portion of the property, I think around 8 acres, to neighborhood mixed use, to allow the residential and the associated satellite retail and retain the existing commercial zoning that would allow for, you know, one-story 60,000 square foot grocery store, which again, you know, he would be allowed to do that by right. So I think the revised plans have come in. We're probably looking at, you know, a revisit to the Planning Commission here this summer. So that one's definitely on. It's definitely moving forward.
All right. And I know we've had several looks at that 30-acre Klein Dolly parcel that the county purchased back in, 2017? Any updates there?
Yeah, we got a really big public event scheduled in a couple weeks, Thursday, June 13th, at the Richens Building in the late afternoon from 5 to 7. We're going to have a public open house. And so the purpose of the public open house is to help bring the community and the neighborhood more up to speed with where we are. I think way back in January or late December, it was around the holidays, we had a charrette with the county council to take a look at the property. What were the possibilities? What could we do? Were there problems we could solve? To what extent, right? And so we spent an afternoon with the council and some members of the public. We followed up with a series of similar charrettes with community stakeholders, other agencies, you know, Mountain Regional Water, the fire district, the other affected departments. Basin Recreation was part of that. Everybody kind of doing a brainstorming. Now what we're going to do, since we have an initial palette of potential opportunities, we're going to turn it over to the community and the neighborhood to help give us some input on that, because again, sort of the thinking here is, rather than to rush out and create a project, rather than to rush out and immediately do an RFP to develop the property, let's bring the community, let's bring the neighborhood. You know, it's embedded in a really important neighborhood. We got Jeremy Ranch, we got Pinebrook. Let's see if we can get a better set of eyes and a broader list of, you know, what might possibly work there, and do that before we go out and start putting, you know, pencil to paper. This is what we've heard thus far, Leslie, is really run the gamut. We've heard everything like, let's primarily keep it recreational and open space to, you know, maybe there could be some other public services out there. Maybe, you know, we've heard an interest in the fire district of a possible relocation of one of their firehouses onto a small portion of that property. We've saw and heard some interest of, you know, maybe some associated residential workforce housing might work, you know, some children's services, daycare, educational facilities. You know, this is the things that we're trying to hear. What we'd like to get out of this hearing is, you know, a more refined list of possibilities, as well as beginning to develop sort of a vision statement for that. And so if people are interested, please put it down on your calendar for Thursday the 13th. If anybody has questions or thoughts, please reach out to our department. We're happy to bring them up to speed or answer any questions they might have.
Okay, that's at the Sheldon Richens building then?
Sheldon Richens, 5 to 7 that evening, yeah.
Okay. Mammoth Drive, this is the Bittner Road connector. When's this going to be finished?
I'm told that road, that connector, which has been desperately needed, I think, going all the way back to the Johnson administration in the late 60s, will formally be opened in the month of July, around the mid-July. For those who live in the Silver Creek area, a lot of work in and around, particularly work being done in conjunction with the mailboxes in that area. I'm told as recently as yesterday that the mailboxes have been completed and opened and operational, but they're just doing the final, you know, finishing touches on it. But that connection between the neighborhood and Bittner Road should be done here in about a month.
All right. And do you know the history of the name of that road, Mammoth Drive? I mean, I was hearing that maybe some fossils were found in that area.
What an excellent historical question. I can't say for certain that, you know, they had, you know, a Pleistocene era megafauna find that, but in the early 1960s, when there was some irrigation work being done in the lower Silver Creek area, a spade hit something hard, and what they ended up finding was, I am told, one of the Intermountain West's most significant Pleistocene era fossil find. A bunch of those fossils are down in the museum at BYU and down at the Museum of Natural History down at the University of Utah. And I would think that there's a connection between that, but an impressive find. I actually have a copy of that report that dates back to, I think, like 1963 or 1964 in my office. But I thought that was kind of an appropriate street name for that, given what was out there.
Okay. And then what about the US 40, the exit to off-ramp roundabout construction? Is that going to start here shortly?
Good question on that. What we're talking about here is exit to eastbound. So if you're coming from Salt Lake and you're headed towards Park City, and you're getting off, you know, to go to the Trailside area or to Home Depot, it's that off-ramp. At the end of that off-ramp, where you hit the interchange, there's going to be a roundabout constructed. The project has been funded by UDOT. Construction on that is going to be happening very, very soon, like as in here in the next couple of weeks. And I would anticipate that the reader boards are going to start going out there. So that off-ramp roundabout is going to remove, you know, the temporary condition that we have out there with the little portable traffic lights. That roundabout gets done first. We're in the process of beginning design for the next roundabout, which is a redo of the roundabout in front of Home Depot and Burt Brothers. That'll begin. That project is not currently funded yet, but, you know, we first need a design in order to get there. So what my colleagues have been telling me is the expansion of that roundabout is probably 3 years out to construction. So first one first, and then design on the second, and then construction on the second one here in a couple of years.
Okay, and finally, just a minute or so, I wanted to mention the East Summit County General Plan. You have been engaging the community. How is that going? Are you getting some good feedback?
Yeah, we got, well, there's two events in front of us. The one actually took place last night at the Ledges. A little over a year ago, countywide deep dive exercise into, you know, the community's broad thoughts about growth and growth management going into the future. Think of them as sort of like living room conversations, which, you know, we gleaned a lot of information and a lot of community sentiment out of that. None of it being really, you know, big surprises. There's a major concern about, you know, the rate of the change, the amount of the growth, where it's going. Do we have the infrastructure to support it? You know, how is this going to impact things like roads and trails and open space and, you know, the local economy? That's important stuff, but it's simply a vision of, you know, what we want to preserve, how we want to evolve. The next step is to take that vision and to put it into actionable items. That belongs in the general plan. And the general plan is important because that leads to, you know, like creating zoning and rules and management tools. We're starting the first campaign here to go from vision to plan is on the east side. So that's the types of discussions that we're going to be having. Had one last night, got a lot of good feedback on that. That was primarily centered around, you know, the North Summit area. On June 18th at the Camas Library, we're going to do the same thing, but for the south side. And we're anticipating a big turnout and a lot of people sharing their thoughts and ideas. These won't be the only public engagement. You know, I think we're gonna start big and start refining down to, you know, some real, you know, agreed upon next steps. Ultimately, that type of information ends up in the public hearing process in front of the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission. They're ready to take this on. It's gonna be the focus of the next year to get this work done. And then on top of all that, we're going to be doing the same thing over on the basin side. Currently, we're working on some potential dates in order to do the same thing over here in the west side, but more to come on that one.
Okay, Pat. Hey, appreciate your time. Thanks.
All right, Leslie. Talk soon.
That's Summit County Community Development Director Pat Pott. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Park City Council will be meeting twice this week. And in the studio with a preview of both meetings, I have City Manager Matt Dias. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so today's special work session starting at 3:30, basically to discuss only Bonanza Park. Why was a separate meeting needed on this?
I think, to be clear, just the importance of the issue. We spent a lot of time and a lot of energy and a fair amount of money trying to identify a future vision and a path and a development pattern for the 5-acre parcel.
Okay.
And the mayor and councilor just said, it's time to set everything aside, clear the deck. Let's have just a singular conversation. Let's hold a special meeting and plow all of our time and energy into it. So really pushing everything off the table and focusing on this solely.
Well, is that what you did on your desk? Because you authored the staff report and not Jen McGrath, who is kind of be the staff lead on this.
Well, to be fair, we did a lot of it together, but it was my, maybe I'm guilty for sort of intervening at a certain moment and saying, you know, given the level of sensitivity and the conversation, are we prepared to have a special meeting? And I don't know, I don't think you were there, but sort of we had that conversation at the time, and I think it was sort of like, we'll take you up on that if you're ready. So Jen, myself, and the team, we work with the consultants, we put together some information, the mayor and council coordinated their schedules, and so this is two meetings this week. We'll be in, you know, almost 10 to 15 hours of, you know, in total, council deliberations on a variety of issues over 2 days, but one day just singularly on the Bonanza District.
Yeah, is this also in response then to the criticism from a member of the council that this project has dragged on long enough?
No, I don't think so. I don't think, look, we get criticism all the time from a variety of sources, public, private, nonprofit, and otherwise. And yeah, we're trying to take that input, we're trying to respond to the mayor and council direction, and a majority of council said we're willing to set aside the time. Let's see what type of ground we can plow together, bring the right people to the table, and we're excited to do that. Jen and I met with the consultants, I guess, twice in the last 72 hours, and they're flying in this morning, and they're really excited too. They've seen other communities get to this point. They understand the sort of the apprehension of some about, really, we're still in the planning process, but we also want to be deliberate. This, you get one chance at this. Whatever we do here is going to be here for the next 100 years. We want to get it directionally correct. We know we can't let perfect be the enemy of good. We know there's a lot of wants and needs for this 5-acre parcel. We can't possibly please everyone. But we want to be really careful and deliberate, and the folks are really optimistic about the conversation we're about to have.
So the city has issued this RSOQ, a request for statement of qualifications?
We have. So we went through that process to sort of pre-qualify development firms or development teams. It's likely a conglomeration of architects and planners and land use experts, maybe parking experts and transportation experts. And it's also a way to tease out and get the private sector excited for what's coming, which will eventually be a request for proposals. It's a fairly common practice, and it does give these firms a little bit of a head start. We will pre-qualify them. They won't have to go through perhaps the same rigor that they would with the RFP process. It's really to tease up and get people excited.
The city's been in negotiations with the Kimball Arts Center now for years at this point. So when will that be nailed down? I mean, are we still talking about selling the Kimball an acre as originally intended?
Ultimately, that will be, I think, a mayor and council decision as the property owner that will be kind of reflective of the vision for the property. And currently, the way the request for statement of qualifications is proposed is that we are still contemplating the acre or so for a future home for the Kimball Arts Center. And so we have included that in the RSOQ, but there's a lot of details that need to be worked out in terms of what the building's going to look like, where it might go, who's going to pay for it. And then there is a host of land use obligations that go along with that in terms of parking and open space and setbacks. And so I believe the hope is to sort of have these processes concur at the same time. So working with the Kimball, working through a request for a statement of qualifications, working through a request for proposals, and seeing if we can marry and true up the community's wants and needs all together. Now, that's a big task. So I think there's a high risk that perhaps not everything works out, but that's the intent currently.
All right. And so it sounds like the Kimball will find a new home. What about Sundance? That was also a partner that was originally envisioned to have some kind of headquarters. Are they out at this point?
No, I don't think so. I think, to be fair, I think they were, you know, an original partner when we purchased the property. And when we purchased the property, working with Sundance and Kimball was a cost recovery strategy that they were going to both buy some of the land in there and then return that investment to the taxpayers. And so I think, you know, we would still encourage that, you know, Sundance is in town and it is contemplating the future of the festival and what it might look like and renovating. And so to the extent that Sundance is interested, I think that there's still an open cattle call for them to work with the mayor and council if they contemplated something at this site or otherwise. And so I don't know that it's as constrained to this site in particular as it had been in the past, but I'm sure they'd be open to it. I don't want to speak for them, but I'm sure they'd be open to a conversation. This is really loud. I don't know if this is really loud for you, but I feel like I'm yelling. Perhaps it's just the headphones.
Yeah, it's somebody's turned it up on you, so try maybe another pair.
All right, there we go.
To pay for this, the city council instituted a 1% increase on the city's portion of the transient room tax. When does that tax expire, or does it ever expire? I mean, is this always going to be on the TRT so that you can do other things with it?
That's technically a decision for the mayor and council to make. When we enacted the tax, the spirit of the, it's called the pillow tax in just layman terms, in terms of the visitor pays this when they use a hotel room or a lodging property in our community. When the tax was enacted, the spirit of it was going to be used to, for the purchase, acquisition, and ongoing development and maintenance of the 5-acre parcel. So that's currently the mayor and council direction. They're not bound by code. There wasn't a community vote on it or otherwise, but I think we've been on 7 or 8 successive budget cycles where 100% of the TRT has been allocated toward the 5-acre site in the cultural area. And until council says otherwise, we're following that direction.
Okay, so is the property paid for at this point or no?
I believe now in 7 or 8 years, half of it is paid for. So I believe we paid $19.5 million in around 2014. So half of that note is paid off, and to be fair, we're halfway home. We're halfway to being debt-free on the property. But there's a variety of strategies using the transient room tax. There's a lot of headroom we borrowed for a very small portion of it overall. That tax has grown over time. So there's some additional financial flexibility to do some creative things on the property.
The city's consultants have identified a handful of key issues. One of these is the parameters of the Kimball. Another is the city's financial support. So what are the guardrails that we're talking about? I mean, how much is the city willing to subsidize on this project?
Fundamentally a policy question, and I can't answer that because I don't set the policy, we implement it. But currently, we are budgeting for the full extent of the transient room tax and any and all means to bring that to bear. So whether it's further leveraging that tax resource, whether it's bonding R on it, whether it's just using cash on hand, these are all types of policy conversations that the mayor and council can have. Conversely, they could also bring other resources to bear. We have parking fund, we have transportation fund, so there are other municipal resources that they can bring to bear. I think the goal here overall, though, based upon the community input that we've heard, I think folks sought and favored sort of a moderate level of investment from the municipality overall. We sort of had 3 versions we were looking at, low, medium, high. And I think the community at the time was favoring through the input a medium level of investment. So council's going to have to sort of stir the pot of what that medium level of investment looks like. Is it just TRT? Is it TRT plus? That's going to be part of the conversation we have in the deliberations.
Yeah, and in that, what about parking? I mean, if the city's goal is to be transit first, I mean, are we building a project that supports that? I mean, should we be building parking in this other than for maybe emergency vehicles?
It's a great question. And I think it's a sort of a keystone of whatever type of development occurs here. And this isn't just a Park City conundrum. This is happening in sort of every city or town or every relatively urban area in the country. And I say urban delicately because we're in a mountain town, but within our core. The land use choices that we make, you know, they will cascade, in this case, probably 50 to 100 years. We have to be true to our goals, true to our vision. We know we need some parking to accommodate the uses there. But how much is really the question. Parking's incredibly expensive. It's also takes up a lot of the footprint, and there are opportunities to do above ground structures or below ground structures, and there's incredible cost equations with that. We also have other locations in the community we're looking at with park and ride and otherwise. So again, this is a delicate balance that we're trying to strike, being true to who we are, making sure that the development can be successful, and then being responsible financial stewards.
Because that's what that parking does. It increases the city's subsidy because it's so expensive and it doesn't make money.
It very well may. I think, to be fair, working with the private sector, that is an opportunity for the municipality to shed some of the risk, shed some of the financial risk. And then if you do have a parking garage, as we have several in town, there are ways to own, operate, and maintain that garage where you can recoup some of your resources through paid parking to help maintain that asset and otherwise moving forward.
Well, what sheds some of that subsidy then is bringing a hotel here. And I guess, when did a hotel get put into this mix? Because as we know, building a hotel just creates the same old thing. It creates more need for affordable housing. It creates more need for child care subsidies. It creates more parking for employees. I mean, same old thing, right?
Sorta. I mean, on the one hand, yeah, an oversimplification is you build a hotel, you're right back in the same hole you were in. However, for a 5-acre parcel that we're seeking a moderate level investment and trying to have all of these other community benefits provided, there are ways that the private sector can monetize aspects to help give us the things that we're asking for. Subsidized parking, underground parking structures, connectivity. However, to your point, I believe that was a concept in terms of a future development pattern that our consultants are saying, this is how other cities and towns have used land use choices to help pay for the development that they wanted, such that they had to bring additional private sector activity to the parcel and just not have it all be a cost center. But that's a choice. It's a policy decision the mayor and council get to make. I'm sort of with you in the feedback saying that did not rise to the top of the level with the community engagement that we had. But the consultants feel compelled to just show land use patterns that have worked in other communities where they sought a high level of return for community benefit, but a moderate level of financial investment. So here we go. These are really complicated sort of fact patterns and gives and gets and any type of a negotiation. But I think I'd side with you that a hotel did not rise to the top in the community engagement information that I reviewed.
All right. Moving on to the Thursday agenda that starts at about 3:30 in work session, a discussion on the next year's budget. We see water rates going up again. We see planning commissioners and other board positions getting a raise. City council and mayor also getting a raise. Is that all covered under the existing revenues, or are we talking tax increase?
We are not talking a tax increase. I don't believe that the municipality, well, we have no record of us actually ever increasing property taxes directly in the manner that you mentioned. So fortunately, sales taxes have continued to increase, and we have a variety of inflationary increases across the organization, tuition, supplies, salt, sand, chlorine, lifeguard uniforms, kickboards, sort of you name it, summer camp supplies and materials. And obviously compensation and benefits is a large part of what we do as a municipality, as a service provider. And that's but one component of this overall budget process that we've been exploring for the last 6 months or so.
So regarding the water rates, some discussion, have we had that on whether or not the golf course should start paying its own way? Because right now they're paying about a tenth of their water costs.
Yeah, and I think that's an easy one to oversimplify. I think like water and parks and a lot of these public spaces, most of them are using raw water to facilitate the recreational and community benefits that occur there. To take a step back, cities and towns handle their own facilities and recreational parks and open spaces in a variety of ways when it comes to water. Fortunately, we're not using culinary water on these areas, so we can come up with a moderate rate increase for those facilities that I think will help all ratepayers and help council achieve their goal of not increasing rates as much as they would otherwise. I think there's a sweet spot in here. We put a lot of work into this. Spent about an hour and a half, 2 weeks ago doing just this, deliberating over and trying to make sure that we were coming up with other ways to not increase water rates as much as they would otherwise.
What's the outlook for sales tax revenues? We've heard from the chamber that the numbers are flat, even down coming this summer. Heber City also reporting a drop in their sales tax revenues.
So far so good. I think looking back, we just got our numbers for March, and we had the largest March we've ever had in the history of Park City. So we had the greatest sales tax March revenue ever. And so very fortunate to have that. I think our predictive model, you know, more or less hit it on the head that we were going to have a big month. And I think this summer we're just seeing flat. I think right now we're seeing relatively flat this summer. And fortunately, I can be in here every 30 days and giving you, you know, a third of what happened 3 months ago. The revenues that we received, they're 2 or 3 months behind. So we just got our March numbers, and they were very favorable.
All right. There's also on the agenda Sundance debrief, no staff report here. Who's presenting?
The Sundance is presenting. So to your point, I haven't reviewed any of the materials, but. As we have sort of every year, we always have a Sundance debrief where their leaders come in and spend some time with the mayor and council and share sort of what occurred at the festival, went well, what they might change, what they're contemplating. And so they'll do that for us on Thursday.
Okay. And again, they have what, until October 1 to get back to the city, or whether or not they want to renew their contract after 2027's festival?
Oh, gosh, you caught me flat-footed. I'm not sure of the date on the top of my head, but thank you. I can follow up with that.
Okay. And I guess real quick, the city will be taking another look at a new Main Street area plan. We've done this before. I mean, I remember plans for ice skating rink, for housing there at the top of Main Street on the main, the brew pub parking lot. We're going to try this one more time? Is that the idea?
Absolutely. I'm very committed to it. If you think about the future of Main Street, if you think about the competitive environment and what's occurring around us with growth and development and other areas, and you think about the assets that the municipality has in the downtown area with Sweet Alley and some of the plazas and surface level parking lots, we seek to engage with the business owners. The mayor and council created a task force to represent the business owners where they can tell us like what they want, what they need. We know transportation, connectivity, walkability, utilization, or maybe repurposing of city assets are sort of all on the board. I am told, and I believe that these processes that we've had, I think the first one was almost 30 years ago, sort of the original Old Town plan, and sort of successively every 10 years we've done this, they've led to wonderful things. We have the two parking garages here that really support and facilitate Main Street, the Main Street Transit Center, the Bob Wells Plaza, all of the sidewalks and the parks that are occurring on Main Street. All of these were done in collaboration with the business district and a heavy level of capital investment. And so I'd argue, yes, affirmatively, and we're really excited about it and really excited to sort of let the business district tell us what they want for their future, particularly what's occurring around us.
Okay. Need to leave it there. Anything else you needed to add?
That's it. Thanks so much. I appreciate
it. Thank you. That's Park City Manager Matt Dias. Again, a city council meeting today at 3:30 and again tomorrow, starting at about 3:40. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. In the studio with an update from the Summit Community Gardens and Eats, I have Executive Director Helen Nadel. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Dinners in the Garden start this week.
Oh my goodness, tomorrow is our very first event. We are so thrilled to have Alpine Distilling's cocktail class. This is a community favorite, and Sarah Sargent herself, the owner and operator, is leading it. And, you know, I think you all know that she was recently inducted into the Gin Guild in London. Very big deal. We are so excited to have her. They are going to be demoing three craft cocktails. And then the group will be pouring themselves, making it themselves. So it's really fun. It's really intimate. It's really interactive. There's going to be, as I said, three cocktails, a whole bunch, I think five different liquors are going to be involved in those, including my personal favorite, the Negrini. Yeah, people will be able to taste those neat as well. So a lot of fun. There is still space, and you can go onto our website and register for that today.
Okay. The cost of that is how much?
It's $65, and it includes one of our fabulous tumblers. We're actually asking everybody who comes to bring their own glass, of course. So, and we'll be providing those glasses for everybody who's in the class, and they can use those as well as their own.
Okay. And it starts when?
It's at 5:30 tomorrow. Yes. So 5:30 to about 7, and it is going to be a gorgeous night, and we're so excited to get started with the Dinners in the Garden. It's just one of the most beautiful settings to have, you know, to enjoy a dinner and enjoy, you know, food and music and a drink with friends and family.
Yeah, so do you have the entire lineup then of Dinner in the Garden?
We have a bunch of them. So our June lineup, we've got actually Nosh is doing what's going to be a fantastic Levantine feast. Those are selling very fast. Tickets for that later in the month. And then we are just finalizing details for our pie and beer. We're talking with Firewood and some other purveyors. We're going to have more information at the start of next month with the rest of the lineup for everyone in the community. And just, you know, really cannot wait to see everybody there.
Okay. You also have some community classes planned. Tell me about these.
Yeah, so lots and lots of community classes. Coming up this weekend is our Fruit Tree 101. In partnership with USU. And this is, you know, for anybody who either has a fruit tree or would like to have a fruit tree, lots of great tips and tricks about getting the most out of your tree and really taking care of those trees. And then we're also doing a lot with Latino Arts Festival. We'll be involved with that. And Recycle Utah is doing a wonderful food and sustainability program in City Park that's Spanish speakers invited that will be conducted in Spanish. So that's all for June. And then July, we've got lots of arts classes, a watercoloring class, an intuitive painting class. We've got yoga for kids in the garden. And we'll be doing another one of our zero waste programs. We had our first zero waste program in partnership with Recycle Utah a couple weeks ago. It was incredibly well attended. It was a really great workshop. I'm just going to mention we're really excited at the Gardens and Eats to be one of the first signatories of the Zero Waste Compact in the community, sponsored by the Community Foundation. Really, really excited to be involved in efforts around climate resiliency in the community.
Okay, and summer camp starting here soon.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, I think today is the last day of school. So first, I just want to provide a ed program recap. We had a really amazing year this year. You know, the first full year of our merger, we saw over 1,800 children, pre-K through ninth grade, many of those multiple times. So, you know, every month we would go into a school or into Holy Cross Ministries and PC Tots. And, you know, at Summit Community Gardens and Eats, we believe that every child has the right to healthy, fresh food. And our education programs provide exposure to fruits and vegetables and access, which really leads to lifelong healthy eating habits that nourish body and mind. You know, we all know that's so important for school achievement, for sports achievement, and just, you know, overall health in the long term. So really, really excited to, you know, have had that impact this school year, and really excited. You know, I feel like if today is the last day of school, then tomorrow is the first day of summer, and we get started with camps on Monday. We can't wait. We usually see about 500 children in the garden, both through our camps that we offer there, as well as partner camps. We have so much fun in the garden, Leslie. We have, you know, gardening, cooking, lots of fun activities, lots of time to connect with nature. And we have tons of different arts and other kinds of activities there. We've got a great ratio, 1:7 for elementary and 1:6 for pre-K. There are still some spaces available for a couple of the weeks of camp. So I just want to highlight that for folks for both pre-K and elementary. The week of June 24th, still have some space there. And also July 8th for pre-K and that last week of camp, August 5th. For elementary. I'll also mention that we were able to provide about 50 scholarships for camp this year. So that's really important. About 25% of our children will be there on scholarship.
And the camps, are they full day or half day?
Thanks for asking. Yeah, so the pre-K camps are half day. Most of those are in the morning. I think we're piloting one afternoon camp. And then for elementary school children, that is at 9:23.
Okay. Also wanted to ask you, I know as a member of Leadership Class 30, you were a participant in the city tour. What did you get out of it?
Well, thank you for asking. Yeah, I know that you spoke with several folks yesterday, Gretchen and Chantal, and of course, Miles himself. Like them, I think, you know, you really spoke yesterday about housing, transit, and childcare, and I think learning from the communities about how they see particularly housing and childcare as basic infrastructure, I thought was a really powerful way to think about that. I also really enjoyed especially in Durango, we really focused a lot on the slow spaces. And I think that idea really resonated. Where in the community are we really able to join together as a community and just have sort of these times to reflect and times to breathe and times to enjoy the beautiful landscape around us and participate in some educational activities. I loved the Botanic Garden, all volunteer run in Durango. And I think we also really focused the town of Ridgeway as art as a really important economic driver in the community. And I think that's obviously something that resonates in our community as well. It was an amazing trip.
When you mentioned the slow spaces in Durango, I mean, are you the outdoor spaces? Like, because I know they've got an amazing, what they call the Durango Dharma Center.
Oh, interesting.
Where they do lots of evening and classes.
Yeah, you know, I guess I was imagining sort of the outdoor spaces that become kind of activation spaces or just spaces to learn more about the Durango history, to enjoy the natural world. Like I said, that botanical garden there is really special. And I think I, you know, walked through it with folks from Swanner. So that was really fantastic to listen to those volunteers. They were installing some new gardens in that space there.
Okay, nice. Anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just want to share that we are really excited to have an opportunity to have a lot of volunteers in the garden. Leslie, I know you were a really fantastic volunteer in our After School in the Garden program, but there's time to volunteer, just get hands in soil. There's time to volunteer for our dinner in the garden, and as well always are being a driver for the food pharmacy in partnership with Christian Center and People's Health Clinic. And I guess, you know, the only other thing that I want to add is that it is go time in the garden. It is the most magical time. And I believe there's something for everyone, as you've heard, but also there's time for people to just come and enjoy this space. It is free. It is a unique space that is open to everybody in the community. And we really just invite everyone to join us this summer in kind of a unique slow space right here in Summit County.
Okay. Helen, see you next month. Thank you. That's Helen Nadel, the Executive Director of Summit Community Gardens and Eat. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.